Hello, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is Donald Altman sitting in for Pathways host, Paul O'Brien. In our high-tech world, it's easy to create the kind of persona you would like others to see. This is easily done with social media. Younger people often judge themselves by these projections or facades. This doesn't just occur on popular platforms, but also business platforms. In fact, for the first time in history, artificial intelligence may be competing with our sense of self. Each click that you make on a digital device is information that is stored and then used to prompt you in various ways to make decisions that shape who you think you are in the future. Given how easy it is to manufacture a digital persona, it might be worth asking, are we losing our sense of self? What does it mean to be authentic in the modern world? To help us with those questions and more is our guest today, Ira Israel. He's the author of How to Survive Your Childhood Now That You're an Adult, A Path to Authenticity and Awakening. A well-known teacher, Ira has taught at Kripalu, Esalen, and other retreat centers, as well as having written over 300 articles on psychology, philosophy, Buddhism, yoga, film, art, music, and literature for the Huffington Post, The Good Men Project, Mind Body Green, and many others. He's also the creator of a best-selling DVD series about using mindfulness to overcome anxiety and depression. Ira is a licensed professional clinical counselor, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and mindful relationship coach. He graduated from the University of Pennsylvania and has graduate degrees in psychology, philosophy, and religious studies. It's a very diverse and rich background. Well, hello, Ira, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Hi, Donald. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. You talk about owning your life and why that's so important. And you had a very powerful experience, one that I've heard you actually even on video talk about, and about an accident that changed your idea about how you accept or experience what's happening in your life and really ties into authenticity. Can you share that story for us?
Sure. January 5th, 1985, or January 6th rather, there was a car accident. I was in the passenger seat and my face was blown off my head and my leg was shattered into, the top of my femur was shattered into hundreds of pieces. Normally you would bleed out, but for some reason, and I'll tell you that reason later, I lived, and then I ended up going on this path. After the physical rehabilitation for 2 years, I ended up studying philosophy and studying spirituality and studying psychology for 25 years to try to answer some of the questions such as, why did this happen?
Sure.
And, how can I be happy now, walking around with these scars on my face and,
just very, very normal, trying to make sense of what happened.
Yeah. And I do think that trauma is the greatest impetus to get us to question, the things that have been fed to us. I'm not proud that it took 25 years for me to get the answers that were satisfying, but time is relative in some ways. So it's better that I got it after 25 years and gained 50 years of freedom than if I had never gotten it. So essentially, what I learned from those 25 years of traveling and studying meditation, studying yoga, and studying philosophy and psychology and all these things is that at the end of the day, we have to own our lives. There's a beautiful quote from the preface of Ecce Homo by Nietzsche, and Nietzsche did not have a spectacularly healthy life, but he said, today is my 44th birthday. I wrote these three incredible books this last year, and everything that went into my life, has been, has come out in the fruits of all of this trauma and whatnot. How can I not be grateful to every moment of my life? So for me, I was in a compassion workshop at Berkeley with Fred Luskin and Rick Hansen, and I decided to, you know, try some new things on, because for 25 years, when people walked up to me in a bar, cafe, they said, "How'd you get the scar on your face?" I would say, "I was almost killed in a car accident." And I realized at some point in time, because of the work that I was doing, was that, you know, that languaging was enrolling them in my victimhood, and I was you know, setting up the relationship in a certain dynamic that may or may not behoove me. So after you know, doing some more work, I ended up with a partner, and at some point in time, instead of saying I was almost killed in a car accident, I flipped the narrative and I said, I'm supposed to have these scars on my face. I'm supposed to have the scar on my leg. And for me, owning your life means doing the opposite of what your mind is built to do. Your mind is built to try to keep you safe. And it does that by creating woulda, coulda, shoulda, didn'ts, by creating resentments. So, you know, your mind is saying things like, oh, I'd be happy now if I had gone to Harvard, if I had not gotten married, if I had become a lawyer, if I didn't become a lawyer, if this car accident didn't happen. It says all these things. And that's great. Unfortunately, you know, like, you need to learn how to accept all those things that you cannot change, because trying to change the past is like trying to jam a square peg into a round hole. So the tool that I learned during that workshop is forgiveness. The tool to accepting your whole life is to forgive everybody unequivocally. And there's that beautiful quote by Lily Tomlin who says, forgiveness means giving up all hope of having a better past. Mm. So for me, that's the radical acceptance that Tara Brach talks about. And that's owning your life. That's saying, hey, you know, it wasn't really pleasant to be in that car accident, but it made me who I am today. The writer, the teacher, you know, it all the things that I experienced throughout my childhood, you know, the sooner I accept them is the sooner I stop causing my own suffering by mm-hmm. feeding into these terrible resentments and, oh, you know, this shouldn't have happened and that shouldn't have happened.
Right.
As soon as I say it did happen, right? There's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. You know, maybe I wouldn't be the writer today if I didn't, you know, go through that car accident. So, you know, the right. sooner We you know, there's a beautiful, beautiful quote by Eckhart Tolle. He says, you either accept your life or change it. Any other position is insane. So if you're complaining about something, but you're not actively working to change it, you're insane. And I really like that. So for me, you know, owning my life means giving up complaining and, you know, making positive steps to creating a life that keeps me at the higher end of my range of happiness. So
well,
I
you explain know, that range of happiness.
Well, we all have, you know, everything that we go through is a tool essentially that will, and some tools keep us at the higher end of our, I mean, this is something called science. So scientifically, some things keep us at the higher end of our happiness spectrum, and some people keep us at the lower end. So you're familiar with the study, and it's a little dated now, but it's called accident victims and lottery winners. And studies have been done on people over a long period of time, and they show that, you know, if I told you, Donald, you just won the lottery, $500 million, you would look at me and you'd say, I will be happy forever. I will never complain again. Everything, nothing. And statistically, you're wrong, right? And by the same token, if something terrible happened and you were in a car accident and, you know, so all these studies have shown that about 18 months, and this is all in Sonia Lubomirsky's book, mm-hmm. The How of Happiness. So if you, at about 18 months, whatever you thought was going to make you miserable will actually resolve. And whatever you thought would make you happy forever will actually go away also. The mind is more resilient than we think it is. Mm-hmm. And it overestimates the things that would make us happy.
Oh, so, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said in your book that you know, a lot of people don't have a clue about authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
That when somebody tells you something that they, you know, they want to be authentic with you, they're probably really just going to be brutally honest with you with their version of the truth.
Right.
Right. What is this? Why do we have that inaccurate perception of authenticity, and why do we need to develop it?
Well, I always quote Winnicott, who, and I'm paraphrasing, says that we develop a false self in order to survive our childhood and get our emotional and psychological needs met the best we can as children. So when we're 7 or we're 10 years old, something works. You're the sarcastic person. You're the jock. You're the tough guy. You're the cool person. You're the geek. You're the nerd. There's a persona. There's a facade. There's an outside that you develop. And what I'm saying in the book is whatever persona, facade that you developed is great because it got you here. But if you analyze the way it's showing up now, it might be hindering you from getting the authentic love that you want. Because at the end of the day, I believe that what we really want is to be loved unconditionally. And unfortunately, because of language and because of our school system and the way we're brought up in this highly competitive culture, we only have tools to gain love conditionally because we're rich and we're thin and we're good looking and we can do this and blah, blah, blah. But all that stuff just creates resentment because what you really crave is to be loved unconditionally just for being here, right?
So that facade is almost like a...
It's like Instagram. That facade is Instagram.
Okay.
And that's why it's such a...
Look how great things are.
Right. And that's how... And because it's basically, look how great things are, give me money. And that's the peculiarity of the system, the paradigm that we're in. Because, you know, that's why Instagram and social media are so inauthentic. Because... And it's fascinating to me because they all started with good intentions, you know,
but
then they get corrupted by these people where someone says like, well, if you hold my toothpaste container while you're smiling in your bikini, I'll give you $100,000. And so you have all these influencers now and these people creating these bogus lives so that they can, you know, get money. And so the whole internet has become fake, really, and that's why you can have people like Donald Trump say fake news, fake news, fake news, and it resonates with people because it's a very interesting phenomenon, the way media has been corrupted. You know, there should be some sort of website for just authenticity and just like pictures of people like crying themselves to sleep and talking about how they hate their lives and they hate their jobs and they're miserable and they're thinking of doing terrible things. You know, like that would be, you know, something kind of novel today.
Well, you know, interesting to think about how emotions are almost second-class citizens, right?
Well, and as I said, the DSM, if you look at the barometer of mental wellness...
And that, for people, those who don't know, is Diagnostic and Statistical Manual used in the psychology field to pathologize, really, different conditions of mental health conditions people are experiencing.
And within those 900 pages, there's no definition of mental wellness. But if you shake the book, the book very hard and look at all the pathologies, you'll find that the barometer for mental wellness in our culture is, can you work? Can you sit your butt at your lathe, on your bus, at your computer, in your cubicle, at the cashier's desk at Whole Foods? It's all about work. We're all about work, work, work. And, you know, at some point in time, I hope our country adapts the universal basic income so that, you know, people could be more free to explore other possibilities rather than do jobs that they hate and then, you know, just... You know, there's a lot of resentment in our competitive system, and it doesn't need to be because we do, you know, our system of capitalism, Herbert Spencer has the quote, survival of the fittest, and, you know, our free market system will mete out the highest quality goods. But we don't need to do that. We don't have limited resources like we did 200, 300, 400 years ago. We've gone through, you know, the industrial age, and we could actually create enough food to feed everyone on the planet. And yet 3.5 billion people live on less than $1.90 a day and will go to bed hungry tonight. So our system is antiquated. It doesn't work. And we need to find a new way of interacting with people rather than just looking at them like they're walking wallets.
Well, true. How do you break down or define authenticity? I mean, what are the key elements of it?
There's five components. There's attachment, atonement, attunement, presence, and congruence. So attachment is being aware of your primary attachment dynamic. And I love that because I heard this lecture by Harville Hendricks, who said that the subconscious purpose of marriage in America is to enable us to complete our childhoods. Our parents had deficits. Those deficits wounded us. Those wounds became defense mechanisms, and those defense mechanisms became our personalities. And we'll always be attracted to people who can replicate the dynamics from one or more of our primary caregivers. So basically, in all of us, and this is why I wrote the book, there's a wounded 7 or 10-year-old in all of us that is wondering why our parents don't love us unconditionally, like why we have to get good grades, why all their pressure on us to dress a certain way, to talk a certain way, to do all these things. I just want to be loved, you know? And so knowing your essential attachment dynamic, and that's something, you know, from the first 6 months of your life, do you believe the world is a safe, loving, abundant place? Or, you know, from Mary Ainsworth experiments, do you connect insecurely or in a disorganized manner, in a frantic manner, like a borderline personality? So knowing your attachment dynamic, knowing your essential perspective or paradigm is essential to showing up in an authentic manner.
So are we locked into that attachment dynamic?
We're not locked into it, but it's like a muscle and it atrophies. And so, you know, you have to practice, like you have to lean in. If you know, Mary Ainsworth found that only 33% of babies had secure attachment. So if you have one of those other types of insecure attachment, you know that, you know, if you're showing up with one foot out the door for all of your relationships because you expect somebody to screw you over, then that's always going to happen, right?
So then it's almost impossible. Where's the authentic self, right? You're just locked into an old
paradigm.
Yeah.
So the first thing for
So that was attachment. Then the next one
is atonement, which means releasing atonement, I like to say at one minute. So at one minute is releasing your resentments about things you cannot change. So you're essentially, there's a very famous quote by Suzuki Roshi that I'm sure you use also. He says, you're perfect and there's room for improvement. So
I love that quote. Yeah.
So the at-one-ment is that if you believe in any type of spirituality, you know that you're essentially whole. You know, you have everything, like you're a child of God or you're whatever you believe, you know, and then you have this ego on the outside that is giving you all this misinformation, like, oh, the world is a dangerous place. Everyone's out to screw you, blah, blah, blah. So what you have to do is make tweaks with that ego that is basically cultural in some ways. And the main way to do that is through forgiveness. So the main tool, that's why it's called at-one-ment or atonement. Because if you're not willing to forgive everyone in your past, you are not done suffering. You're creating your own suffering. And if you want to be done with suffering, you need to, it's a very bitter pill. And as I say often,
well, especially if you've experienced trauma or something like that as a result of somebody or been abused, right?
I had my face blown off my head. And I called the driver of the car accident 25 years later, and I forgave him. And it gained me an immense amount of freedom. My only regret is that it took me 25 years. So, you know, there's a way to clean up your past, and that is through forgiving people, you know? And if you're not, you know? So attachment, atonement, and then the third quality is attunement, and that's being able to connect with other people. And, you know, we live in this weird culture where everything is through screens these days and people don't know how to make eye contact and have this and mirror other people's affects. So the lines from the book are mirror neurons do not fire via text message. People like that line. And the other line is one hug equals 1 million Facebook likes. So, you know, We're deluded into thinking that we're connecting with people when we receive these text messages. But what we really need is a hug. We need to hold hands. We need to throw a frisbee, get a coffee, really be with other people, because that, you know, that's the, that that is the one thing from that Harvard longitudinal study, the one thing that correlates most strongly with happiness is our ability to connect with other people. Our ability,
face-to-face connection is so, it's like a medicine, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a medicine because we live in this very perverse culture where we're deluded into thinking we're connected, and we really just need to put down the devices and be with other people, just sit there and breathe. So attachment, atonement, attunement, then presence, not letting your mind drag you into the past or future, and the best tools for that are yoga, for me, or yoga and meditation. Because, you know, in both of those, you can watch your mind drag you into the past or drag you into the future. And the past doesn't exist. It's dead and gone. The future is just your imagination or your fantasies or whatever it is. That doesn't exist, you know? So you need to learn how to be present and have that anchor for your life. So attachment, atonement, attunement, presence, and then congruence. And so for me, we live in this very privileged culture where we can decide who we want to be. And also, as I said before, you know, we can find our vocation. We're not running from lions and tigers. We're not, you know, like in imminent danger. I have enough money to have a nice lunch after we're done with this conversation. And so we have to realize what a great privilege that is to decide who we want to be, and then to have the tools to create that life. That's an incredible privilege that most of humanity has never enjoyed. So the quote that explicates that the best is the beginning of my book, which is by André Gide, who says, "It is better to be hated for who you are than to be loved for what you are not." And so that's why authenticity is so important, because we're in this conundrum where we create this false self and we seduce people into liking our facades and our personas and our outer selves, but we really don't want that. We want them to love our whole selves. So that's why this that fiction of like,
yeah, it's almost like filling up on junk food or like a soda with no nutrition, right?
Right. Going on Instagram is like eating a box of Oreos.
That's a wonderful. So that's in the book, Attachment, Atonement, Attunement, Presence, Congruence. That's a wonderful way of helping people tap into authenticity. You know, another thing in the book that you talked about was how experience is subjective. Even our language is biased because of our experiences. And so how can we use language in kind of a new way to bridge the gap that separates us from others?
I tend to think that everything that's really important happens to be paradoxical. There are these conundrums. So in a way, language alienates us from things, but it's also terribly uncertain. You know, I love that phrase, the map is not the territory. So I have a map in my head, and I think it correlates to the tree and the outside my window, but you know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, you know. And if I say, Donald, I'm thinking of the color red right now, and you say, I'm thinking of the color red, how can we ever know that we're thinking of the same you, the same skin, the same red, things like that? So there's this inherent uncertainty, and we have to be impeccable in the words we choose so that we're not creating this subtext that's inauthentic. You know, sucking people into some drama or creating some oddness or weirdness. You know, we want to be authentic because that'll inspire other people to show up authentically. So the key tool is to really hone in on the way you're expressing yourself so that you enroll other people in showing up in a particular way. I mean, obviously the famous quote is, be the change you want to see in the world, right?
Well, that's interesting. So kind of what you're saying, I love that idea of enrolling someone. So so our authenticity helps others because it's kind of an invitation for others to be authentic. Is that what you're saying?
So if you stab me in my stomach right now, my whole body, every muscle would go like this and contract, right? And then if you stab me with the same pressure on the other side of my rib cage, the knife would essentially bounce off because of the contraction. And this is what our minds do also, meaning that if I say, Donald, I think you should lose 15 pounds. Your whole body goes whoosh, just like that. And it won't hear anything I say in the future. But there's a way of using I statements. As you know, I love Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication, and owning your way of being and showing up in a loving and vulnerable manner. And that'll inspire, you know, if you tell someone, hey, listen, I need you to be authentic. I need you to be vulnerable. It's, you know, it's pointless. But if you show up in a certain way and say, you know, I was really terrible yesterday and I was out of integrity and I'm so sorry that I couldn't show up in a more loving manner, then, you know, that could inspire the other person to, you know, I have this beautiful line that goes like this. It says, please forgive me for not understanding the way you choose or the way you chose to show your love for me. So, you know, you use language in a certain way to enroll people in showing up more authentically.
Wow, that's a beautiful idea. I think that's very inspiring. Well, thank you, Ira. I'd love to talk longer, and there's a lot more I know that we could explore, but we've run out of time today. So let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is iraisrael.com. That's spelled as one word, correctly?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. And for those who tune into the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of Reflect, Awaken to the Wisdom of the Here and Now, and other books about awakened living. For more information, go to mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want, via the internet, or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with Ira Israel, author of How to Survive Your Childhood Now That You're an Adult, A Path to Authenticity and Awakening. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBU FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com. As well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts, the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Thanks again to Ira Israel and to all you listeners for tuning in and being part of the Pathways conversation.